The Republican presidential race is heating up in Michigan, where Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum have launched new ads today ahead of the primary later this month. In a race now so close, the candidates have been forced to attack each other instead of President Obama. But how will President Obama be seen when one opponent emerges? James Fallows asks that question in a provocative article in the new issue of Atlantic. We're going to start there today. Fallows asks, is Barack Obama a chess master? Or a pawn, a skillful political player, or someone out of his depth and at the mercy of a second-rate staff and Republicans? And his answer is, let's find out. James Fallows is a veteran presidential watcher and Obama supporter when he ran in 2008. And James, you say now is the time to ask this question because the answer will be different depending on the outcome of the election. Larry Summers, who was, of course, in Obama's inner circle, told you that if President Obama loses, he'll be a failure, a health care reform dismantled by conservative judges. But if he wins, 40 years from now, people will wonder how we ever lived without his health care plan.
Yes. What Summers was saying is that people will take it for granted as part of the landscape, as everybody now does Medicare. It was very bitter when that bill was passed in 1965. And Summers was saying, if Obama stays in, this will be one of his most important legacies.
Well, what you do is you look at the president's perceived weaknesses, his perceived strengths. So let's go through some of the perceived weaknesses first. That President Obama came into office inexperienced, that he has a coldness, a complacency about the talent he surrounded himself with, former Clinton staffers, a symbolic mismatch that President Obama's rise to the presidency sent a signal of far more sweeping ambitions than Obama the man ever had in mind. So take inexperience, a charge from the right. You say it's maybe not that far off base.
Given that Barack Obama was a first-term U.S. senator when he began running, and that unlike, say, Bill Clinton, he hadn't spent the previous 20 years accumulating this network of contacts and friends and policy conversationalists around the world, you know, whom Clinton, for example, had cultivated very, very seriously, Obama had personal development. He was a more accomplished writer when taking office than probably any of his predecessors in several generations had been, but there were areas in which he wasn't really prepared for what it would take to deal with the Congress and deal with some other problems. Also, he became president against Hillary Clinton because of the Iraq War. He had opposed it and she had not. But about a month before he won the election against John McCain, suddenly the landscape changed. There was the financial collapse, and something that had not been part of Obama's background at all, world fiscal management, dealing with financial crises, et cetera, suddenly that was his responsibility and the dominating fact of the first 2 years, at least, of his presidency. And so, therefore, he reached for the network that was available, which was the old Clinton economic team. And so the instincts they had were the ones available to him.
You say, and well, actually you quote defenders like Tom Daschle, who say that even with that inexperience, President Obama staved off economic catastrophe. You say what?
There was a sense of genuine specter of depression that didn't happen, but that's hard for Obama to say. Second, Daschle and others, including Summers, say the health insurance step is something other Democrats had not been able to achieve. Obama finally got it passed by the narrowest of margins, and that will have a long-term effect. And finally, Daschle points out something that's true in my own experience. Around the world, with only one or two exceptions, the U.S. is in much higher esteem than it was 5 or 6 years ago. An exception is in Israel, where the U.S. is less popular.
What would you say? Has President Obama failed in carving out U.S. relations with Israel?
I would say that among his failures is certainly managing the peace process. Now, I think that the Netanyahu government has not been a force for long-term resolution of the peace situation in the Middle East. And I think that the Obama administration probably has let itself be more of the pawn relative to the Netanyahu administration than vice versa. And I think that's one of the areas where that's one of the comparative real weaknesses.
Okay. Let's take a look at some of the personal issues before we move on. We mentioned President Obama's perceived coldness. It's called the Mr. Spock problem. And he knows that and he's defended himself against it. But why is that important? I mean, some would say, look, if you're improving American image abroad and avoiding economic catastrophe, you also don't have to be everybody's best friend. But why is it important?
There's always one area or more than one where any incumbent is going to be weak. And we know that when it comes to inspiring people, President Obama certainly can do that on the mass scale. But politics also involves a lot of sort of individual person-to-person EQ type operations. And there, the president, with his great analytical skills and his great abilities to do large-scale rendering of emotion, again, as he did it in Tucson after the shooting of Gabby Giffords a year ago, that he doesn't seem to have that patience with individual people that, say, Bill Clinton or Ronald Reagan had, and that became an important part of their building alliances within the Congress, within their administration, and that sort of person-to-person politicking.
Well, does that also go along with a criticism, especially from his early backers, that President Obama was tone deaf? The Occupy movement came from the streets. You mentioned that one of the mistakes of the White House was not making sure that Martha Coakley knew who Curt Schilling was. Now, this was the Democratic candidate who was beaten by Republican Scott Brown for the late Ted Kennedy seat here in Massachusetts. She went on the radio and didn't know a famous Red Sox player. But more important, the White House didn't seem to know that Scott Brown was running circles around her, and out-of-state forces were marshalling here in Massachusetts in what would become the Republican consultant-backed Tea Party Express. They didn't know.
I think there are a couple of things here which we can understand about President Obama's situation, even though they may be weaknesses for him. One is that his natural register, the issues he's thought about all his life and has written about, involve America's place in the world and reconciliation across racial boundaries or cultural boundaries. That's how he came to prominence with his speech in Boston at the 2004 convention. But economics, it's not part of how Obama just is or has lived. Also, I think there's a factor that I do understand with President Obama. There's a lot about politics that drives you crazy because it's irrational. It shouldn't matter that Martha Coakley didn't know about Curt Schilling. And it just makes you your head blow up when you think, well, and really an election's going to turn on this and we're going to lose control of the Senate, et cetera, et cetera. So I think he gets as a very serenely and controlledly rational person. Sometimes he can't conceal his exasperation with the nuttiness that is actual politics.
Well, but, you know, that was just a metaphor for other things.
Yes.
But we'll move on from the Martha Coakley. But just that notion that the Obama White House didn't seem to get certain things, as you and others say, was way too forgiving of Wall Street, coddled financiers who had created the crisis. Address that.
Their explanation would be, number one, they were putting out the fire. They didn't have time to worry about water damage. But also, it was not part of their instinctive register. If you think of people like Summers or Geithner or others on the economic team, they were very, very closely familiar with and connected to Wall Street, and so they were more attuned to sanctity of contract.
Right. We can't do anything about their bonuses or their salaries because they
yes.
have a contract.
And the natural retort to that, well, what the hell? People are being laid off. They're being foreclosed, and there are contracts there, too. That part of the discussion just wasn't there. And I think everybody recognizes that as a weakness. The other was, as you mentioned earlier, deferring too much to the Congress in constructing the health care bill. And that was a result of fighting the last war. One of the big perceived failures of Bill Clinton's failed health care effort was dictating to the Congress. And so they overcorrected and said, okay, all you seven committees, you know, you come up with a plan. And almost a year was wasted in that process. And you had a result that again, just barely got through, but it did get through.
That's James Fallows taking stock of President Obama so far, which he did in a piece for The Atlantic. And James, let's look at your criticism that the Obama administration self-destructively adopted the Republican claim that it was the federal deficit that was the most immediate threat to the country instead of, as you say, explaining sooner to people his theory that you have to spend now to stimulate the economy, maybe by pointing to other times in history. You say President Obama seemed to somehow miss something there.
That seemed to me crazy at the time. But the administration, for better or worse in my view, embraced that concept and said, yes, we're going to try to be deficit fighters too. And so that led to sort of the showdown over the debt ceiling in the summertime. I think the administration has demonstrated at least the ability to grow and learn because since last fall, the president has taken a different tone, saying we recognize that in the long run, deficits matter, but right now, when the economy is shrinking, it's not the time to cut back.
You say President Obama has developed his decision muscle.
That was a wonderful metaphor given me by somebody I would love to name but can't, a very, very experienced and prominent veteran of national politics. And this person was saying that it's exhausting to be in national office, because every minute of the day, somebody comes to you with a choice that nobody else could make because it was an impossible choice. And this person said he thought that President Obama was more finding his stride on this.
Yeah. Well, and here are test cases where you and others say President Obama has shown mastery on the job, containing what could have been an open-ended commitment to Iraq, walked a tightrope in Afghanistan, preparing a path for withdrawal, managed the troubled relationship with Pakistan, even after the killing of Osama bin Laden, encouraging the Arab Spring events in general without getting mired in the details. Now, some of these stories are nowhere near over. But James Fallows, you begin by asking the question, is he chess master or pawn? What's your answer?
My answer is he is becoming more of a master. What matters most about a president is whether he learns from his inevitable failures and overcomes his inevitable weaknesses. I think in the last year, we've seen signs of President Obama doing that. You don't end up governing on the issues that you run on. That's the case for most presidents. So that is where he has had to try hardest. And I think probably the second thing is recognizing the reality of the political opposition he faces. He's become more confident in being able to draw a line, say, I stand for this, they stand for that, take your choice.
And what about the symbolic mismatch? You know, the idea that he was a symbol for many of hope and change, more so than he, the incrementalist, ever would have wanted to be. That sort of mismatch in people's minds, how is that squared?
Again, for context, it's worth remembering that almost every president ends up fairly early in his term disappointing, even betraying some of the people who believed in him most fervently. The Atlantic ran a bitter cover story about Bill Clinton in 1995, about his welfare reform bill and how this was a terrible betrayal of liberal ideas. And I think for Obama, the challenge was even more, it was built in because his campaign, number one, by virtue of his identity. Second, his whole rhetoric and presentation and the largest sorts of issues of politics and political destiny and people's sense of themselves. When you look, however, at the things he was talking about, they almost all were more centrist in their detail. For example, he was against the Iraq war, but he said that's because it was a dumb war. He was in favor of the Afghanistan war and wanted to actually put more troops there. His health care plan was in a way more centrist than Hillary Clinton's during the campaign. So there was that tension between what he would always represent in American history and what he wanted actually to do in office. And when that's compounded with needing to put out the fire of world financial disaster, you had all the more grounds for cognitive dissonance.
James Fallows, his piece on President Obama is in the March issue of The Atlantic. You can read it at hereandnow.org. James, thanks as always.
My pleasure. Thanks very much.